जैया राधा मदाबा कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन बालाबा गिरिवर धरि जैया गोपी जन भलाभा गिरिवर धरि यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीर बनचारी जमुना तीरा बनछारी जैया राधा मदाभा कुंज बिहारी जैया राधा मदाबा कुंज बिहारी जैया गोपी जन बालाबा गिरिवर धरि जैया गोपी जन भालाभा गिरिवर धरि यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरा बनचारी जमुना तीरा बनचारी जया राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जया राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज आचार्य आस्तोत्तर शत श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज आचार्य आस्तोत्तर शत श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज शिल प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य शिल प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथरा श्रीमं भागवतं की निताई गौर प्रमनन्नि ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरिस टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरिस टू शिशि गुरु वंशि गौरंग ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 8, entitled Withdrawal of the Cosmic Creation. Chapter 4, entitled Gajendra Returns to the Spiritual World. And we're going to read several verses, starting with text number 6 all the way to text number 12, I believe. Yeah, 12. No, I'm sorry. All the way to 10 text number. Number 10. So we have in the board text number 6, no? No, hold on a second. Agenda was, no, this is yesterday verse. So we did this yesterday, so we don't have a text in the board. Today we started with number 7. We can put in the board text number 10. You write the board, Mati? Who was you doing this regularly? You did this today? Hold on. I believe we did this yesterday. Hold on 1 second then. Yeah, Gajendra, the elephant, was touched directly, but yeah, Maharaj covered this yesterday. So, text number 10, please. So, I'm going to read the Sanskrit of text number... I'm going to read the Sanskrit of 7 and the translation all the way to 10, and hopefully we can read number 10 together. Text number 7. Savai purban abhut raja pandyo dravita sattamaha indradumya iti khyato vishnubrata parajanaha. Translation. This Gajendra had formerly been a Vaishnava and the king of the country known as Pandya, which is in the province of Dravida, South India. In his previous life, he was known as Indradumya Maharaj. Text number 8. Sae kadara danakala atmavan. Grihita mauna brata ishwaram harim jatadarasta pasa aplu tochyotam samarchajan asha kula chala srama. Translation. Indradumya Maharaj retired from family life and went to the Malaya hills, where he had a small cottage for his ashram. He wore matted locks on his head and always engaged in austerities. Once, while observing a vow of silence, he was fully engaged in the worship of the Lord and absorbed in the ecstasy of love of Godhead. Text number 9. Yadrichata tatra mahajasha muni samagachat chisha ganai parishyata tambikshatushnin akritar hanadikam rahasyupasha upashinam rishishchukopaha. Translation. While Indradumya Maharaj was engaged in ecstatic meditation, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the great sage Agastya Muni arrived there, surrounded by his disciples. When the Muni saw that Maharaj Indradumya, who was sitting in a secluded place, remained silent and did not follow the etiquette of offering him a reception, he was very angry. And this number 10, I guess most of you has this creation. So we read, तस्मानि पंसापन अदात असाधुर अजन्दुरात्मा कृता भूधिर आद्या विप्रावमन्ता विशतं तमीशं यथा गजस्ताब्धमतीश एव तस्मानिमशाप्तं अदात् असाधुर् अजन्दुरात्मा कृता बुधिराद्या विप्रावमान्ता विशतं तमनीशं यथा गजस्ताब्धमतीश एव तस्मा इमंसापन अदात् असाधुर् अजन्दुरात्मा कृता बुधिर अद्या विप्रामन्त विशतं तमनीशं यथा गजस्ताब्धमतीश एव तस्माय अन्तु महराशिन्द्रदुम्य इमां दिस् सफां कर्स् अधात् हि गेव् अशादु नोट् अट् ओ जेन्तो अजं दिस् दुरात्मा डिग्रेडेड् सोल् Akrita, without education, Buddhi, his intelligence, Adya, now, Vipra, of a Brahmana, Avamanta, insulter, Vishatam, let him enter, Tamisham, darkness, Jatha, as, Gajaha, an elephant, Stobhamatihi, possessing blonde intelligence, Saha, he, eva, indeed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Agastya Muni then spoke this curse against the king. This king, Indradumya, is not at all gentle. Being low and uneducated, he has insulted a brahmana. May he therefore enter the region of darkness and receive the dull, dumb body of an elephant. Purport. An elephant is very strong. He has a very big body, and he can work very hard and eat a large quantity of food. But his intelligence is not at all commensurate with his size and his strength. Thus, in spite of so much bodily strength, the elephant works as a menial servant for a human being. Agastya Muni thought it wise to curse the king to become an elephant because the powerful king did not receive Agastya Muni as one is obliged to receive a brahmana. Yet, although Agastya Muni cursed Maharaj Indradumya to become an elephant, the curse was indirectly a benediction. For by undergoing one life as an elephant, Indradumya Maharaj ended the reactions for all the sins of his previous life. Immediately after the expire of the elephant's life, he was promoted to Vaikuntha Loka to become a personal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, in a body exactly like that of the Lord. This is called Sarupya Mukti. Tasma iman sapan adat asadur ayam duratma kritabud hiradya vipravamanta vishatam tamisham yatagajastabda matisha eva. Agastya Muni then spoke this curse against the king. This king Indradumya is not at all gentle, being low and uneducated. He has insulted a brahmana. May he therefore enter the region of darkness and receive the dull, dumb body of an elephant. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tapsai Sri Gurve Namaha. Namom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Srinivadi Pashityade Shatarine. Bancha Kalpa Taruvya Shakri Pashindu Vyeva Chapatitanam Pavanevi Vaishnave Vyo Namo Namaha. Yesterday Maharaj mentioned something that I thought it was a very fascinating point. Well, not fascinating is not the word, but an important instruction that any type of contact with a saintly person is positive, even if it's a contact with a saintly person actually from a negative, you know, that have some negative connotation. Even if you commit an offense to a saintly person, still there's something, because of that contact with the saintly person, there is something that is going to happen that at the end is going to, you know, at the end of the road is going to be positive. Just because of this contact with the saintly person, which I thought it was quite remarkable and says so much about the position of a saintly person. Maharaj was pointing out of the position of King Huhu, who have this mind-boggling casual approach towards a saintly person. He explained that he just wanted to, you know, make a joke or have some fun with the saintly person, like, you know, would you do with your pals or your friends, you know, that if they're in the water, you want to scare them, you know, and sort of touch, pull out their legs, you know, so they jump out of the water, something like that. So this was the case with Huhu. And just because he had that contact with the saintly person, he was chastised pretty heavily. But that chastisement, the end of that chastisement was that he was going to receive the causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a very short time. So, and we see cases in the scriptures of demons or demoniac type of persons actually having a contact with a great devotee of the Lord, and still at the end receiving the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead just because of that contact. We have the case of Prahlad Maharaj. Hiranyakashipu was so inimical to Prahlad Maharaj, but just because of that relationship, you know, that contact that Hiranyakashipu had with Prahlad Maharaj, when after Hiranyakashipu was heavily chastised and the reaction was very heavy, nevertheless, because of that contact and that inclination, you know, the mercy of the devotee, Hiranyakashipu was delivered just by the request of Prahlad Maharaj. We have the situation of Jagai and Madai, how Jagai threw the pot of the clay pot into the head of Lord Nityananda. And although they were so inimical and so offensive to both Jagai and Madai, to Lord Nityananda and Srila Haridas Thakur, nevertheless, just because of that contact, they receive the mercy of the Personality of Godhead. So the power of the devotee is very immense, is very amazing. And however, there's you know, we have to be very, very careful when we are in the presence of a devotee, of a especially advanced devotees. And in this case, Maharaj Indradumya is a very important lesson, a very important also, it depicts, you know, that we have the case here of a great, great Vaishnava, a saintly king, Maharaj Indradumya. It is explained that he was a staunch Vaishnava king. And in fact, the kingdom of Maharaj Indradumya was in South India, and I did not go to this part of the Jatra that my spiritual master organized. But the second part of the South Indian Jatra was in the surroundings, or visited, you know, the areas where, you know, Maharaj Indradumya was, and where Gajendra also, the place where Gajendra was, is located in South India. And at least that's, you know, there's a temple and there's an area that, you know, is like that in South India. And so Maharaj Indradumya was a great, great Vaishnava king. And he was very much absorbed, you know, in devotional service to the Lord. And he was following the the process of devotional service that, you know, after performing his duty as a saintly king, he retired. So he retired and was performing austerities in the Malaya Hills, meditating in Krishna. And so he was very well situated. However, he did made a mistake that he didn't properly receive the great sage Agastya Muni and his disciples. So he still, he was considered a king, you know, even though he retired, you know, he still was considered, you know, that as a king, he should be very careful to receive and properly honor a great devotee. And he failed to do that, and Agastya Muni cursed him. And the curse to become an elephant, which is a very heavy chastisement too. But we have heard throughout this several classes that there was a great benediction behind it. The question though is that there's several questions that this comes, you know, and this is a subject matter that also brings a lot of questions, and Krishna touches this subject matter in the Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter. And it's also throughout the scriptures, because we see many examples of this happening, in which in general we understand that the great advanced devotees, you know, those who are very elevated Vaishnavas, they don't fall down. In general, they don't fall down. But through the scriptures, we see cases such as Maharaj Indradumya, a great Vaishnava, who fell down from his position because of offending Agastya Muni, and he became an elephant. And then we have the case of another case that one can think of the scriptures, Maharaj Chitraketu, who offended Lord Shiva, and he became a demon, Vitrasura, in his next life. We have the case of Maharaj Bharat Maharaj, who became attached, you know, to a deer, and his next life became a deer. So we have situations like this. These are great, great, great Vaishnava devotees that were very elevated in the devotional practices, but still fell down. And then in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna touches this principle in the 9th chapter. He says that even if my devotee commits the most abominable activities, and this is quite something to understand, you know, even if my devotee commits the most abominable action, if he's engaged in devotional service, to be considered saintly because he's properly situated in determination, you know, he's this part of the of Krishna's expressing this comes after he says that he's just pressing he is pressing his relationship with the devotees. He's saying that although he is equal to everybody, he doesn't have, you know, he's equal poised to everybody. He's equal to everybody. Nevertheless, for those who are worshipping him with love and devotion, those devotees he considers very special to him, close to his heart. And he say here, they are in me as well as he is, like he is in them, they are in me. So, and then he says that so much, Krishna say, that even if they commit something abominable from the perspective of social, you know, and political or whatever, some in the eye of society they commit something abominable, they still have to be considered saintly, because the quality of their devotion, they're fixing their devotion. The expression is bhajate man ananya bhag. Ananya bhag is exclusive devotion to the Lord. And just because of that exclusive devotion, even if they commit something abominable, they still will be protected by the Lord. He says that he quickly becomes righteous. You know, very quickly he will be regain the position of devotional service. And then Krishna says his famous phrase, Kunteya Pratijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashati, that you declare boldly, Arjuna, my devotee will never perish. Or my devotee, basically the position of the devotee, this devotee, it will be always protected. And so Krishna's protection is there for those devotees, for that class of devotees, advanced, pure devotees, those whose devotion is quite fixed, then they will always be protected in all circumstances. And then this is the situation that we have with these personalities like Indradumya Maharaj, like King Chitraketu, like Bharat Maharaj. There, even though they did commit, they made a mistake. You know, in the case of Maharaj Bharat, he became attached to a deer and he started to neglect his spiritual practices because of worrying and caring for the deer. So that's unexpected for a personality of that level, but it happens. And there was a consequence for that. But because of the quality of his devotion, he was still protected by the Lord. So in his next birth as a deer, he was able to remember fully the lessons of his previous life. And, you know, his devotional inclination, his devotional service. So, and in the case of Maharaj Indradumya, he became an elephant, but in this, when the situation came that he was in great danger, he was able to remember everything. You know, everything, the devotion that he has for the Lord and the type of relationship he has with the Lord, everything came back to him. So he was protected, and the Lord came for his protection. And in the case of King Chitraketu, that's a very interesting case, because he did criticize Lord Shiva. And the pastime was like King Chitraketu was flying in his, you know, Bimana, and as he's flying in the universe, he passed by the region where Lord Shiva was sitting. So the scene was this: Lord Shiva was sitting among so many saintly persons, and he had Parvati Devi sitting in his lap, and he was holding her, sort of embracing her, and Chitraketu Maharaj, he sort of apparently criticized Lord Shiva to saying, "What is this? You know, it's almost like acting like an ordinary human being with no consideration that he was sitting among saintly persons, and there he is, you know, like
you know, having this display of intimacy with Parvati in front of all these sages. So, however, there was a difference of, say, King Chitraketu offending Lord Shiva and Daksha offending Lord Shiva. These are two examples in the scriptures of being of committing an offense to the same personality, and the two of them had two different results. Both were chastised, but two different results. And the difference was in the heart of the personality who did the offense, in this case, King Chitraketu. Lord Shiva could understand the mentality of King Chitraketu, and Lord Shiva didn't take an offense. He just smiled. He understood. So what was the mentality of King Chitraketu? King Chitraketu was a great Vaishnava devotee. And he didn't have or harbor some envy towards Lord Shiva. Envy was not in place. He didn't have a particular negativity to Lord Shiva, towards Lord Shiva. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he reveals, you know, in his commentary, the mentality of King Chitraketu. When King Chitraketu saw Lord Shiva, he thought, he felt like, you know, wow, Lord Shiva, you know, he can do anything that he wants. He's so elevated. However, he thought, he's the greatest controller in the universe. He's a great personality. And if four great people, they have to set examples for society. If they do things that common people won't understand, then there will be the common people will criticize them and will point out faults and find faults, you know, in the great personality, and that will be very detrimental for society. Therefore, he should not do that. He should not act like that. He should try to, you know, behave in such a way that it doesn't allow criticism for the uneducated, you know, type of a populace, you know, like that. So he was thinking like that. He was criticizing. In one sense, he was criticizing. He should not do that because he had to set the proper example. But it was not out of envy. So Lord Shiva didn't take an offense. He just smiled. But Parvati was really upset. And Parvati cursed him. And King Chitraketu accepted the curse, and he apologized to Mother Parvati. And, that his intentions was not to insult. There was, you know, but he accepted chastisement. He took the life. He took the next birth as a demon, Vitrasura, but he also remember his position as a devotee of Lord Vishnu. So that's a different. With Daksha was another thing. With Daksha, Daksha has a lot of envy towards Lord Shiva. He was negative towards Lord Shiva. So when he insulted Lord Shiva, that was a different thing. Lord Shiva did take. Well, Lord Shiva tolerated Daksha's you know, offensive nature. And so Lord Shiva was avoiding, to say, okay, just, you know, we're not avoiding this person who feels so much envy towards, enmity towards him. But when Daksha offended Lord Shiva in such a way that Sati, his wife, have to commit, you know, just burn herself, give up her body because she couldn't take, you know, hearing the offensive, then Lord Shiva chastised very heavily. Then he took the offense and he chastised very heavily Daksha. He cut the head of Daksha. And at the end, Daksha ended with a goat's head. You know, he gave Daksha life again, but he gave him a goat head. So that was a big, big chastisement. So the principle is that at least that I see in these verses, that great devotees that are in the position, in a very elevated position, they will always be protected. Always the mercy of the Lord will be there. Their devotion will never perish. That's always going to be there. And so even if mistakes are there. And the question is, you know, well, how is that a devotee, a great devotee, can make mistakes? And there is different causes. One is, you know, that is explained. Some of those causes are because the devotee still have to deal with some residual conditions that are there. And then the Lord makes an arrangement to actually eliminate that. So one thing that we have to understand with Krishna's and the relationship with the devotees is that Krishna is very much involved in the devotees' purification. You know, according to how, when one comes sincerely to seek for the shelter of Krishna, Krishna is directly involved. So Krishna is orchestrating things according to the needs of the devotee. So if a devotee still have some residual things from, you know, the condition, material conditioning, then Krishna will make an arrangement to eliminate that. And thus, you know, the devotee does something that is very unexpected from their position, and the things gets corrected. Another one is a devotee make a mistake induced by Krishna for Krishna's purpose, such as the case of Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit did a mistake to offend a brahmana by putting a dead snake in the neck of Shanika Rishi, which is a very gross offense. And but it is explained that was induced by the Lord because the Lord wanted the Bhagavatam to be manifested to the world. So so there are things like that of, you know, great devotees committing something that appears to be abominable. It's all seen by the Lord and is for the purpose of either glorifying the devotee or bringing the devotee, eliminating anything that is an obstacle for the devotee's devotional practice. Also apply to us, the leader devotees or the aspiring devotees, that Krishna is also there orchestrating things. And Krishna is very kind when maybe these two verses, you know, apichesat sudracharam verses, not necessarily fully apply to most of us, because we cannot claim, you know, this bhajataman ananya bhak, you know, that this single exclusive devotion to Krishna. However, there is something that is definitely there, which is Krishna is very kind and very understanding, and he sees the sincerity of the devotee. So one thing is to consciously and purposely engage in sinful activity, thinking that, oh, well, the scripture says that if you chant Hare Krishna, you know, then the sinful reactions will go away. So that's great. It's almost like having, you know, like whipping towel or something to clean your hands. So wiping, you know. So you go and get yourself, do all your sinful things, and then in the morning go and chant Hare Krishna, and then you clean yourself, and then go and do the thing. More or less the whole process of atonement, you know, or you know, that the Christians have too, that you go and confess, you know, oh, I did this, so okay, sing so many this prayer and that prayer, and then you are absolved, and then you go and do it again, and then again, and then you go that process again. So that is very, very offensive, and Krishna understands that, oh, this guy is just taking, you know, is just taking advantage. So he will reciprocate accordingly. So he'll say, okay, you just figure it out on your own. But if we sincerely, you know, want to serve Krishna, and you're afflicted either by condition, you know, even though, you know, you have, you know, we go through this in general, in our beginnings, the stages of devotional service, that there are things that we just don't want to do, but we're sort of almost forced to do by our condition. And then we try it again, and then we try again. So we're in this process of trying to deal with this very ingrained condition that becomes an obstacle in our spiritual life. And Krishna sees this different. You know, he is very kind, because he understands, you know, the sincerity of the devotee. The sincerity of the devotees is, I feel bad about this. I don't feel good about it. I can, you know, I try to help myself, but I can help myself against these things. So, and I feel bad, you know, and I pray to Krishna. And Krishna sees that. Prabhupada says in the purport of these verses, in the ninth chapter, Apichet Sudaracharam verse, that one should not take advantage of Krishna's, you know, in terms, but that's more or less with people who try to be, just take advantage of Krishna's kindness. But when we are sort of fighting with some heavy condition, then Krishna is very kind, and is very understanding, and very loving, and very patient too. And he helps one. He helps one by either through the devotees or through some ordeal, some arrangement, some punishment that may come, that simply is anything that can happen to the devotee that sort of helps accelerate the removal of that big obstacle. So it's there. Is there, and that's something that as devotees we do experience. We experience Krishna's kindness, you know, and tolerance. It's like a very kind type of parental figure. So, and that much, so much of that kindness comes through the devotee, you know, the Krishna's devotee. Especially, you know, when you have a relationship with the spiritual master, when you come to that relationship, the spiritual master is the external manifestation of that loving kindness of Krishna. And just like a very tolerant parent, he just brings you up, you know, from not rough would be the word, but you know, I can't say the word. No, when you're stumbling all over the place and knocking things down and things like that, you know, clumsy. Our clumsy devotion like that. And he tolerant is just bring it up, brings it up, educating us, training us, and helping us overcome these things. So, Krishna explains, Lord Chaitanya explains, that all this arrangement, all this kindness, all this tolerance and loving, caring that Krishna and his devotees extend to conditioned souls can be completely destroyed by only one thing. Only one thing becomes the destroyer of this opportunity, which is an offense to the devotee. Now that brings us back again to the beginning of the class. You know, even offending a devotee may have a very positive thing. So, you know, so if it destroys your spiritual life, how is it, you know? How is it? So, destroy the spiritual life, destroy the opportunity that you have, but whatever you have done, Krishna says that, whatever we have done in devotional service, that never goes away, is always there. But offending a devotee, it knocks out basically the opportunity that we have received. It destroys it. And unless we become aware of that and we seek the forgiveness of the devotee, then that position, then we have to suffer some heavy reaction that can, you know, sort of take so much suffering to come back again to the position that we were before. That position is secure. That position is secure. So in all the cases in which the devotees were still protected, or people who commit offenses to the devotees, the result was all right at the end of the punishment, they all seek forgiveness from the devotee. So we have in the case of Indradumya Maharaj, he seeks forgiveness. In the case of King Huhu, he seeks forgiveness. In the case of Chitraketu Maharaj, he seeks forgiveness. In the case of Durvasa Muni, who offended Maharaj Ambarish, he was going to be chastised heavily. And when he realized, well, by the mercy of Lord Vishnu, that I can give you protection. The only one who can give you protection is Maharaj Ambarish. So you surrender to his lotus feet. So that's when he was protected. So we have to be very careful with the great devotees not to commit an offense. And if by any chance, accidentally, or due to ignorance, we commit an offense, we immediately should seek forgiveness. And by that positive sort of consciousness towards the devotee, one is also receive the favor of Krishna. If we allow some enviousness or some negativity to harbor in our relationship with the devotees, that, you know, then that's very destructive for the opportunity. So anyway, some talks about this. Any comment or questions? Yes, Jaini Tai Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. So, his name is
Indradumya Maharaj.
Indradumya Maharaj. So, Indradumya Maharaj was already like a vanaprastha, and he was meditating on Lord Krishna in devotion. And Krishna arranged a situation for him to commit an offense. Because he's just sitting in the forest, you know. It's not like he's sitting in his palace and the guy came. Like, he stumbled on him in a forest and he's supposed to stand up and greet him into this forest that he's just hanging out in. It doesn't, I mean, almost if a Vaishnava is offended by that, it seems a bit peculiar. So it's, I mean, arranged by Krishna. And then, you know, he's cursed to become this elephant, Gajendra. And then Gajendra's salvation is remembering the devotion he had already had before committing the offense. And immediately after committing the offense, he did humbly say, "Oh, please forgive me," right? So, it seems like a waste of 1,000 years. Like, Krishna arranged for him to make an offense, and then he becomes an elephant for a super long lifetime after coming back to the same place that he was already at in devotion. Like, it's not as if I'm philosophically speculating here, that it's not as if his life as Gajendra really improved his devotion at all. It just was an extra lifetime that Krishna threw in there sort of whimsically. Because, I mean, he did ask for forgiveness for this offense that he committed that was, like, completely out of his control. I mean, he was already humble. He was already there. He was already an exalted Vaishnava.
Yeah.
And there was, like, a sinful reaction almost for his... He was, like, basically... Krishna's like, "Here's a sinful reaction for an offense that I'm making you do." Man, it doesn't seem very loving, actually. It seems a bit mischievous. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, one thing that Prabhupada mentioned in the purport that we read is that he was that the curse was a benediction because he was able to free himself from all the sinful reactions of his past life. So whatever was there that needed to be finished to cleanse, that was the arrangement that the Lord made. So, you know, it's very tailored. We cannot make a general, you know, thing. you know, for some will be this, for some will be that, for some will be, you know, Krishna makes all this type of, you know, very, very tailored type of arrangements. That's, you know, how I understand it. So that's what King Indradumya needed somehow. You know, in his life as Gajendra, the highlighted part of Gajendra's, you know, life, the thing that was highlighted in the narration is the sense of power, the sense of, you know, like control, that everything was perfect for him, for his enjoyment, like all the pieces were there, and the sense of, you know, he's on the top of all that. That was the thing that was highlighted, and that was the thing that got completely, you know, like chewed by the crocodile, and then bring to him the consciousness that, you know, he is completely dependent. So, you know, the thing that got corrected somehow or other is that sense of, you know, I'm on the top of it, you know. That's my sort of limited understanding, you know, of this thing. So there's always something that we get that is something inside of us, each one of us, that is the really, you know, core condition. And Krishna starts to address us in certain ways. So then we have to go through certain ordeals that force us to become aware of those things, and then you start to deal with them. Once you become aware, then you have the capacity to be able to overcome. The problem is when we're not aware of those things, it's just like, you know, hey, I'm doing devotion, I'm doing my service, Prabhu, type of thing. You know, you're in your zone, you know, doing your service, but we're not aware that maybe we have, you know, some pride or something or some, you know, unconsciousness about something, and then Krishna corrects by ordeal. So it's very tailored, and the arrangement comes in different ways, you know, for different ones of us, you know.
Thank you. That actually clears up so many things about this story. Mm. Just that answer is quite, thank you, Hare Krishna.
Thanks. Mikey, Prabhu. Mikey gets a mic.
Oh, I just had a quick comment. When you were saying that the devotee is destroyed, when he commits some offense, I thought of like, kind of like the phoenix who like burns like itself and just turns into a pile of ashes. So it's like an initial like pitiable condition. You're just a pile of ashes, but eventually the phoenix will rise up again and become beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
So I always think that when, you know, these kind of stories happen, it's kind of like they're destroying themselves, but they're coming out even more glorious. So it made me think of that example.
Yeah. I just, as you mentioned, just came to mind, flashed into my mind, you know, Ajamils, you know. He became very offensive towards the Brahmanas. I mean, he became basically a thought, you know, that criminal. But at the end, he was protected because those things, it came back again, you know. So the sinful reaction of committing these offenses at the end will bring out suffering, will bring out, you know, what you knew before, what you get, you know, that you received before, which was the protection and shelter of Krishna. So it will come back again. So nevertheless, that's never lost. So that's when it says that even when you offend a devotee, just that contact at the end, you know, I mean, it may take some lifetimes of suffering, but, you know, that remains there. So it's quite remarkable. Any other comment or questions? Krishna Archana.
I don't know if I have the question completely clear, but somewhere during the course of the discussion, you brought up the necessity to immediately extend an apology if an offense was committed to a saintly personality. So, many times as a young devotee, one may not be in that very strong position to directly extend an apology if there's, you know, something done on the subtle plane because of the particular, you know, patterning in one's psyche. So I find myself, for instance, recalling one or two incidents as a very young devotee where, you know, the spiritual master is reaching out to me, but because of my own, you know, learned patterns of behavior, I would be very withdrawn. So I see in retrospect that in one sense there's a kind of contrition that I feel that, you know, I couldn't respond to, you know, the spiritual master or saintly personality because of the particular, you know, learned patterns. And so it's often occurred to me that it would have been very wonderful to have been able to have had that strength of mind at that time to say, you know, please forgive me that this is my particular condition, that I cannot actually respond appropriately or correctly. But one wonders, you know, if there's room many years later for that apology to have to be as to be serving its purpose as it could have at that time, were it to have been possible to extend it.
I think yes. I mean, I would say because it's a sincere expression and appreciation and part of the relationship, you know, if it comes out from the heart of the disciple, of the person, you know, towards a saintly person, is quite appropriate, I will say. However, there's another point that the saintly person can understand the heart of, you know, the young devotee, or the unexperienced devotee. So, and in terms of the spiritual master, is definitely there, because the contact with the super soul, or being, you know, an external manifestation of the super soul, the mentality is understood. So the spiritual master doesn't take offense. Just like Lord Shiva didn't take offense because he could understood the what was in the heart of Maharaj Chitraketu. The spiritual master knows that. That's something that we have to fully embrace and understand. It's there. And so he knows, he won't take offense. So in the case we know of our Guru Maharaj, he was always he's present in so many ways. So he understood perfectly. So, but nevertheless, I find it quite appropriate that, you know, one can express something if it's in the heart. like that that would like to apologize or something for things, and you know, we're done. But the spiritual master understands. He's very tolerant too. You know, when you commit offenses just because of your immaturity, he corrects it very lovingly. So it's quite sweet, it's quite nice, you know. Even when you get chastised, you feel, you know, quite protected and cared for. So it's wonderful. Okay? Oh, one more question. Okay.
So these situations where devotees, you know, as saintly personalities are going out into the public, and persons may in fact actually deal with the particular saintly personality, the devotee, in a very offensive, unkind, thoughtless manner. Certainly it's not understanding the position of the saintly personality that they've just spoken to, but and the saintly personality, you know, understands, but at the same time one wonders if that particular reaction that they have to undergo is something that is mitigated in some way just by virtue of the fact that it was that contact, which was something of the earlier point of your class.
No.
Because certainly there has to be a very great reaction.
Yeah. Well, I think that the tipping point is if the heart of the person has envy, you know, is inimical. That's a different thing. You know, so a demon or someone who is sort of influenced by these demoniac tendencies will react anemically towards a devotee, you know, and but an ignorant, sort of innocent person, then just out of ignorance, you know, just deal with a devotee like, you know, like not understanding the position of this person, then it's different. Then that's when the devotee the pure devotee, when he goes into the public, takes the position of a Madhyama preacher. And the Madhyama means distinction, so the devotee avoids the demons and extends himself to those who are innocent. And then that contact in itself is also transformative for anyone. So as long as there's not this, you know, animosity and envy, you know, there's some tangible transformation. And that's how I understand. Is that right? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.